done, so let the good times roll. Let the good times roll. Don't care if you're young or old, get together, let the good times roll.
I think probably he was the missing link between the big band era and the rhythm and blues era. He is the direct line to rhythm and blues and hence rock and roll.
Let the good times roll. Let the good times roll.
Whenever I see the Rolling Stones, I can see that Mick Jagger was influenced by Jordan. I'm sure that if he asked Mick, he'd say he was influenced by him. Yeah, Chuck Berry on the Today Show recently, he said that everything he did was influenced by Jordan. James Brown says the same thing. Ray Charles, a lot of the great entertainers will confess that Jordan was the man who influenced their type of performance.
Let the good times roll. Don't care if you're young or old. Go out and let the good times roll.
He was way ahead of the time, put it that way. Tuned like a Saturday Night Fish Fry and all that sort of stuff. You couldn't find no white band could do nothing like that. Nowhere. In Harlem, no black bands could do it nowhere. I mean, a man was a genius. That's right. In his own right.
Call it what you want. Jump music, novelty swing tunes, or just plain old jiving rhythm and blues. Louis Jordan's music was unlike any other music that Americans, black or white, had ever heard. Yet it became very popular very quickly. It was some of the happiest blues music around. It came right out of the big band era, but needed just five musicians to make it work. Throughout the 1940s, Jordan and his little band were one of the hottest acts in show business. And even today, half a century later, his music still resonates. I'm Nancy Wilson. On this edition of Jazz Profiles, we pay tribute to jump jazz pioneer Louis Jordan. It's May 1938, the swing era. On stage at Harlem Savoy Ballroom, Chick Webb's big band and his star vocalist Ella Fitzgerald are swinging the big audience. Making eyes at Ella from the saxophone section is the band's lead altone saxophone player, 30-year-old Louis Jordan from Brinkley, Arkansas. But it's Jordan's last night with the Webb band. In his 2 years working with Chick, Jordan had never really convinced the drummer and band leader that he was the right man for the job. This night was the last straw. Webb had fired Jordan for trying to recruit three of Webb's top people, including Ella, to start his own band. Louis Jordan figured he had what it took to lead his own group. He played a good horn, had a good voice, was genuinely funny on stage, and had a lot of ideas for a new band. So, the day after his last gig with Webb, Jordan and three musicians, none as it turned out from Webb's band, began rehearsing. Months later, the marquee above the Elks Rendezvous, a small club just a few blocks from the Savoy, read Louis Jordan's Timpani 4. The name came from the pair of symphonic timpani he had added to the drum kit. But it was more than his novelty sound that made the group stand out. Music historian John Chilton explains.
He made a big leap because Chick Webb's band was really playing big band swing, highly orchestrated, with gaps for improvisation. Now, Louis Jordan, by amalgamating the music of his childhood, the rural blues, with jazz music that was then popular in most nightclubs, produced this new style, this jump music, as it was called. It was supposed to make people get up and jump and dance. The critics put the label on it was jump music. This was really full of background riffs, you know, repetitive figures, small gaps for people to improvise, and nearly always with a vocal. But it also utilized new concepts of shuffle rhythm that all combined and produced this really attractive music. it really made the jitterbug is they want to get up and jump, you know, they'd jump. That was the command, and that's what they did.
Soon, all of Harlem was jumping to Louis Jordan's brand new sound. People had been used to hearing a big band, as many as 18 musicians when they danced. Jordan had found a way to keep those people entertained and dancing, using a much smaller group. Rhythm and blues expert Billy Vera explains.
It had to be fairly structured music when you had 18 or 15 guys playing together at the same time. With five, they could be looser, kind of like the old Dixieland bands, but yet there was a certain riffing going on. The horns would answer the vocalist, or would answer the soloist if it was a saxophone soloist. And that would create a rhythm and a drive that made it danceable.
Louis Jordan and his Timpani Four worked the crowds at the Elks Rendezvous hard, and he worked his band hard too, demanding a highly polished sound. Just 4 months after forming his new group, Jordan was ready to record. With a name change to the Timpani Five, he cut half a dozen sides for Decca Records. Right from the start, Jordan had fun with his music, with songs titled Toodaloo on Down, Honey and the Bee Ball, and Barnacle Bill the Sailor. Between his crazy song titles, his exciting new sound, and the fact that WNEW was broadcasting his band live to New York twice every week, Louis Jordan was on his way. By 1941, he had his first really big hit record. Surprisingly, it wasn't a novelty tune. Instead, it was a new version of I'm Gonna Move to the Outskirts of Town that has become a certified blues classic. Let's listen to it.
I'm gonna move way out on the outskirts of town. I'm gonna move way out on the outskirts of town. I don't want nobody, ooh, always hanging around. I'm gonna tell you, baby, we gonna move away from here. I don't want no ice man, I'm gonna get me a Frigidaire when we move way out on the outskirts of town. I don't want nobody, ooh, always hanging around.
That's Louis Jordan and the Timpani Five's first big hit from 1941. I'm Gonna Move to the Outskirts of Town, with Dallas Bartley on bass, Arnold Thomas on piano, Walter Martin on drums, and trumpeter Eddie Rohn. By this time, Jordan and his band were working hard all around the Midwest, in Milwaukee, Chicago, Cedar Rapids, and Omaha. The audiences that flocked to their shows were not only treated to some new sounds, but to some brand new sights as well. Aaron Eisenhall, Jordan's trumpet player, and Burl Adams, Jordan's longtime manager, explain.
See, he was trying to create a technicolor picture on the stage, like you got now on TV.
When Louis walked on stage, it was like a neon sign. He had Kelly Green jackets and yellow canary trousers, and the socks and the shoes were dyed to match the trousers. The band looked like a neon sign when they walked out. You had to pay attention to him. Then Louis moved all over the place.
Chris Columbus, who was the drummer with the band for many years, has some colorful memories too.
Everywhere that Louis Jordan went, it was a holiday. Louis Jordan was a fabulous entertainer. And everybody, because we wore lettuce green pants and tomato red coats, looked at him as though he was a clown.
I want a new suit and a long pair of shoes. I'm gonna get all the things I choose. I know what it's all about. They'll just about knock me out.
I'm Nancy Wilson. And this is NPR's Jazz Profiles, a tribute to bandleader Louis Jordan. More and more, Louis Jordan became known for recording and performing novelty tunes with crazy, downright funny lyrics. One of them, Five Guys Named Mo, eventually became the title of the recent Broadway musical revival of Louis Jordan's music. Everybody Jordan knew always enjoyed a good laugh.
I want to tell you a story from way back. Truck on down and dig me, Jack. There's Big Mo. Little Mo. Four-eyed Mo. No Mo. Look at brother. Look at brother. Look at brother. Who's the greatest band around? Makes the cats jump up and down. Who's the talk of Rhythm Town? Five guys named Mo. When they start to beat it out, everybody jump and shout. Tell me, who do the critics rave about? Five guys named Mo. They came out of nowhere, and that don't mean a thing. They're red high, and you'll know why when you hear them swing. Highbrow, lowbrow, all agree, they're the best in harmony. I'm telling you, folks, you really ought to see Five Guys Named Mo.
He moved out of the Capitol to the Foxhead Tavern in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and that gave us an opportunity to pressure him into doing novelty material. Dallas Bartlett, who was the bass player, and Eddie Rohn, the trumpet player, were a great help. They'd keep bothering him, too. And they'd sent us a song called Five Guys Named Mo. I sent it to Louis, and the boys messed around with it, and they just couldn't make it work. Dallas Bartley came up with the idea of adding the lines of Little Mo, Big Mo, Four-Eyed Mo, Eat Mo, and No Mo. And by adding that line, it worked. And they started doing that at the Foxhead Tavern. And they got a great reception from the audience.
Jordan and the Timpani Five's big hit from 1944, Five Guys Named Mo. Louis was a natural with comedy material. During his Arkansas childhood, he saw and even performed in the regional traveling minstrel shows. His colorful delivery and stage antics in such songs as Deacon Jones are said to have come straight from that tradition.
Brothers and sisterettes, Deacon Jones sends his deepest regrets to the members of the flock who are new around here. There's something about the deacon that I want to make clear. Who's honored and respected?
Deacon Jones.
Now who's so unaffected?
Deacon Jones.
When a sinner's moaning low, who will share his tale of woe?
Lord and Lord, hallelujah, Deacon Jones.
Now who's so handsome and good-looking?
Deacon Jones.
Who can smell a rooster cooking?
Deacon Jones.
The good old Deacon. Who gets all the chicken breasts and leaves the giblets for the rest?
Lord and Lord, hallelujah, Deacon Jones.
Deacon Jones.
Oh, Deacon Jones.
Deacon Jones.
Oh, Deacon Jones. Lord and Lord, hallelujah, Deacon Jones.
For all of his shrewd ability to pick the right tunes to keep his popularity on the rise, Jordan sometimes would stumble onto his material almost by accident. Jordan's manager, Burl Adams.
We were pretty lucky. Louis was playing the swing club in Los Angeles, and the little hunchback gentleman would come to see me every day and bothered the dickens out of me about hearing his song. He was a maintenance man in an apartment building. Louis wouldn't listen to songs because Louis said if he listened to the song and he told the person he didn't like it, he'd have to spend too much time, the person would be arguing with him. So he just sent him off to me. And this man was persistent, and I didn't want to pay any attention to him, I must confess. But finally I said, okay, now let me look at your song. So he gave me the song. It was Is You Is or Is You Ain't My Baby, which became a great hit for Louis and helped him tremendously in moving into the white market.
Is you is or is you ain't my baby? Way you acting lately makes me doubt. Yous is still my baby, baby. Seems my flame in your heart's done gone out. A woman is a creature that has always been strange. Just when you're sure of one, you'll find she's gone and made a change. Is you is or is you ain't my baby? Maybe baby's found somebody new. Or is my baby still my baby true?
Louis Jordan may have chanced upon Is You Is or Is You Ain't My Baby, but he also had good luck with the number. He and his band happened to be in Hollywood when they first worked the tune up, and Universal Pictures filmed them performing it for one of their big feature movies. And in October of 1943, when the music industry lifted its recording ban, Louis quickly released this song as a single. It positively took off.
Is you is or is you ain't my baby? Maybe baby's found somebody new. Or is my baby still my baby true?
Louis Jordan was having so much success with his combination of swing, blues, jump and jive, comedy, and technicolor suits that even Bing Crosby, one of the most popular singers in the world and a fellow Decca artist, wanted to cut a record with him. They teamed up in 1944 for the song Your Socks Don't Match.
We heard a chick the other day cooling out her boyfriend in every way. She kept on quonking, full of complaints, like she expected folks to be saints. She insisted that he be neat. So this was her complaint complete. Report to the nation. I like the dimple in your chin. I love the tricky way you grin. Still, you ain't no kind of catch. You know why, don't you?
Tell
Doggone
me.
You, son, your socks don't match. The teeth you have are pearly white.
All both of them.
Your lips are sweet and pucker right. You're the kind to lift my latch. But doggone you, boy, your socks don't match.
Keep talking. The
shoes you Joining wear, Bing Crosby for that duet proved that Jordan was a top show business attraction with both black and white audiences, a rare achievement in American show business at that time. By 1946, he had staged a round-the-world tour with his Timpani Five and revamped the band's personnel. Then Louis Jordan went back into the studio to record a brand new tune, which would eventually become one of his biggest hits. A few months later, the group made this song into what was called a soundie, a three-minute film much like today's music videos. This soundie sparked another big wave of popularity for Jordan, but it was bandleader Woody Herman, not Jordan, who first got the song out on record and made it into a huge hit for white audiences. Erskine Hawkins followed with a version of it that quickly caught on with black audiences. This was one of the few times Decca Records was caught napping with Jordan's material. But it didn't seem to matter, because when Louis Jordan and the Timpani Five's version finally hit the jukeboxes and radio stations around the country, it took off like a rocket.
Both black and white audiences just couldn't get enough of the song about that hard-headed gal, Caldonia.
Caldonia! Caldonia! I want to make your big head so hot, Ma. I love you just the same. I'll always love you, baby, because Caldonia is your name.
Somehow in my memory, I think of Caldonia, and I think most people do, of those lyrical lines in the song, Caldonia, Caldonia, what makes your big head so hard, Ma. I listened to the record and discovered that most of the record is an instrumental. It has only one vocal chorus. It has two more instrumental choruses, a little spoken or narrative with a refrain, and then back to an instrumental.
You know, my mama told me to leave Caldonia alone. That's what she told me, no kidding. That's what she said. She said, son, keep away from that woman. She ain't no good. Don't bother with her. But mama didn't know what Caldonia was putting down. So I'm going down to Caldonia's house and ask her just one more time. Caldonia! Caldonia! What make your big head so hard? Ma!
One of Louis Jordan's most successful songs, Caldonia, with comments from the veteran rhythm and blues composer, Mike Stoller. Coming up, the unbeatable Louis Jordan starts losing a few. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is Jazz Profiles from NPR, National Public Radio. With the triple hit success of Caldonia, Louis Jordan was established as a true giant in the entertainment world. His career kept picking up speed. His next hit became the title of his own hour-long feature movie, with Jordan in the lead role. The song was a perfect vehicle for Louis, a chance to preach to his audience at breakneck speed, giving them a sermon packed with funny lines and mock-serious advice. Some call it the original rap record. Beware, brother. Beware.
Now, fellas, just you fellas, listen to me. Got something to tell you. I want you to listen to every word and govern yourself accordingly. Now, pay attention. You see these girls with these fine diamonds and fox furs and fine clothes? Well, Jack, they're looking for a husband. And you're listening to a man that knows.
They ain't hooking.
They ain't fooling. And if you fool around with them, you're going to get yourself a schooling. If she saves your dough and won't go to a show,
beware, brother, beware.
And if she's easy to kiss and never resists, be careful.
Beware, brother,
be careful. And if you go for a walk and she just listens while you talk, she's trying to hook you. And if nobody's looking and she asks you to taste her cooking, don't do it, don't do it. And if you go to a show and she wants to sit in the back row,
bring her down front.
Bring her right down front. And if you go for a snack and she wants a booth in the back, watch her. She's trying to hook you. And listen, if she's used to caviar and fine silk,
beware. Louis Jordan and the Tenpenny Five from 1946. By now, Jordan's career was in the stratosphere, and the big hits just kept coming. Buzz Me sold 800,000 copies, a tremendous number for 1946. Then he broke the 2 million mark, an almost unheard-of number, with a song written by Jordan's producer, Milt Gabler, and two country and western musicians. And you can still hear something of a country twang to Choo 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 Boogie, even with Jordan's rockin' bluesy sound.
Heading for the station with a pack on my back. I'm tired of transportation in the back of a hack. I love to hear the rhythm of the clickety-clack.
and hear the lonesome whistle, see the smoke from the stack, and pal around with Democratic fellas named Mac. So take me right back to the track, Jack. Choo-choo, choo-choo, jaboogie, woo-woo, woo-woo, jaboogie, choo-choo, choo-choo, jaboogie. Take me right back to the track, Jack. Destination, but alas and alack, you need some compensation to get back in the black. You take a morning paper from the top of the stack and read the situations from the front to the back.
Through the rest of the 40s, Louis Jordan and his Tiffany Five reigned supreme. Their sound became the most imitated one in popular music. Publishing companies sold thousands of copies of small group arrangements of Louis Jordan tunes. Jordan toured the country, his popularity often helping him open up previously all-white theaters for his own and then other black groups. He experimented with his sound, adding a few extra horns to some of his sessions, but rightly figured that his original quintet combination was still the best. Jordan's biggest challenge was keeping a fresh supply of new musical material on hand. Fortunately, everyone from doctors to cab drivers wanted to write for him. But wherever his material came from, he knew when and how to use it. Singer and vocalese pioneer, John Hendricks.
He had a way of gauging an audience. I mean, he could come in a club, and he'd do the first number, and he'd look and listen. And from that first number, he would know what numbers to do for that particular audience the rest of that night. He had this subliminal way of gauging the receptivity of the audience to what he did. You know, that was amazing. I used to watch that with fascination. He epitomized what I think is a rule. If you're gonna have anything to do with jazz, you gotta have a sense of humor. Because with jazz goes laughter. You have to laugh. And in every good solo, there's about five laughs, you know.
Louis Jordan's longtime drummer, Chris Columbus.
See, you can take words home with you. You can't take the chord change home with you. You know you like what the trumpet player played, but you can't remember it. But you can remember the words. Joe Williams said, every day I have the blues. And if you didn't know no more than that, you took it home with you. And I like that new song. And that's the way it was with Louis. He had a million new songs.
Louis had his finger on the pulse of the nation. He was very hip, but not so hip that he would get above the people, you know. In fact, he would get down on the ground. I mean, his music took its shoes off, you know. He would do things like, doggone your hide, boy. Doggone your dirty hide. Doggone you dirty dog. I gave you the pig and you wanted the hog. I mean, that was something everybody could understand because that's the way we talked.
Louis Jordan was a gold mine. Didn't do nothing wrong. Everything we did was a hit. We had hits on both sides of the record. They had to hold the records up because you're supposed to put a dog on the side of the hit. We turned our records over and it was a hit. They had to stop putting them on the box until they wore out down there. Everything we did was right.
But in 1950, the seemingly unbeatable Louis Jordan started losing a few. First, his longtime manager, Burl Adams, left him. He insisted it was for health reasons, but Jordan feared it meant Adams thought his career had peaked and was on the way down. So he tried something that Adams had always opposed, fronting a big band. But fans missed the Tiffany Five, and with no hit records coming from the big band experiment, increased expenses, and few bookings, he disbanded the orchestra in 1952. When Jordan emerged 3 months later with a new Tiffany Five, he found the music scene was changing. Rock and roll and a more raucous brand of rhythm and blues were taking over.
You want to show them how great you are. You made a date and you want to use my brand new car.
button up your shoes and grab your hat. There'll be no days like that.
Even though many of the hot new R&B groups saw Louis Jordan as their musical godfather, producers viewed his act as too old-fashioned, too tame. Jordan turned to some new things. He tried cashing in on a mild calypso craze with a couple of records. He switched from alto to the beefier-sounding tenor saxophone for some of his solos, trying to get the rougher sound that marked the rhythm and blues craze. He even hired a female vocalist. Then, in 1953, just as Jordan was getting ready to join a big national tour with Ella Fitzgerald and Woody Herman, tragedy struck. A car accident killed his arranger and pianist, Jimmy Patterson. It also wrecked his band truck, equipment, and music library. Jordan managed to join the Big Tour of 1953, as it was called, but trouble was clearly in the air. A few months later, in May 1953, the Big Axe fell. Decca Records canceled his recording contract.
I once lived the life of a millionaire, spending my money, I didn't care. Always taking my friends out for a good time, buying champagne, gin and wine. But just as soon as my dough got low, I couldn't find a friend, no place I go. If I ever get my hands on a dollar again, I'm gonna squeeze it and squeeze it till the eagle grins. No.
A Louis Jordan tune that suited the times. Nobody knows you when you're down and out. From 1954. John Hendricks, who wrote some of the tunes for Louis Jordan's last Decca session, remembers that time well.
I was in the studio when Milt Gabler said, "This is his last date for Decca." And I said, "What?" He says, "Yeah." I said, "We have to let him go." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, they got this new kid, you know, coming up, so Louis has to get out of the way." I said, "What new kid?" And he said, "Elvis Presley." Everybody had to move out of the way for this guy. Well, that's the only way they could have done that kind of thing, because if you had a free choice, a lot of people might have chosen Elvis, but a lot of people would still have been listening to and buying records by not only Louis Jordan, but 15, 20 other people, you know, that also bit the dust at that same time.
Louis Jordan's producer from Decca Records, Milt Gabler.
Top brass at the company had changed, and I had to let Louis go and Louis Armstrong go and Billy Holiday go, because then when I recorded Bill Haley and the Comets in 54, I was doing all the things I'd learned from recording the Louis Jordan Band. I got so upset after about a year, I called Jordan's office and said, "Jordan, why don't you come home, Louis? I'm using all your licks and tricks with Bill Haley, and he's making a success." And I said, "And you do it better. Why don't you come back?" He says, "I'll see you when I get to New York," but he never came back. Never. It is a shame.
Not surprisingly, Louis Jordan was not one to give in. Though he'd lost his major record contract, he had not lost touch with his fans. So the gigs, while fewer than before, kept the Timpani Five going. And Jordan didn't entirely stop making records. He cut sides for RCA Records, Mercury, Ray Charles Tangerine Label, and Blue Spectrum. Jordan stayed busy, touring smaller venues in America, particularly on the West Coast. Jazz critic Leonard Feather remembers seeing a lot of Jordan in Los Angeles.
And then after his star diminished and he was no longer a big attraction, it was rather sad because in his final years, he still had a group together, and he was working out here locally in Los Angeles. He was pretty much a forgotten man for most of the public, I guess. A new generation had arisen that really didn't know that much about who Louis Jordan was or what he stood for.
When a big revival of blues roots music was starting to sweep the nation around 1973, Jordan looked like he might be on a comeback trail. Jazz impresario George Wein staged a special tribute for him that year at the Newport in New York Jazz Festival. Then Wein started working Jordan and his Timpani Five on his European festival circuit. In Paris, Jordan cut a particularly good album on the Black and Blues label. It featured rejuvenated versions of some of his best old hits. He lived in New Orleans for a while, where to his great joy, he was invited to play as a sideman on some straight-ahead swing jazz records with trumpeter Wallace Davenport. But Jordan's increasingly frail health soon forced him to move back to Los Angeles, where he died suddenly of a heart attack on February 5, 1975, a few months short of his 67th birthday. When Louis Jordan died, those who understood American popular music knew that the country had lost a giant.
You said you would meet me at the station gate of the honeymoon excursion. You told me you would meet me at the station gate, but I've got a different version. Train number one's gone. Train number two's gone. Train number three's been gone. How long must I wait for you?
Someone else coined the phrases rhythm and blues and rock and roll, but Louis Jordan helped make them possible. He took the dance mania, harmonic sophistication, jazzy feel, and unflagging optimism of the swing era and boiled them down to a compact hip essence. Louis Jordan knew that people wanted to have a good time and be treated as just folks. That's why his lyrics were at once funny, even silly, but down home and real too. No wonder performers as varied as the Coasters, Ray Charles, Chuck Berry, James Brown, and Nancy Wilson have pointed to Louis Jordan as a deep influence. Louis Jordan may be gone, but as long as there's soulful, popular, elegant, humorous, bluesy, good-time dance music being made somewhere, he is still very much with us.
Oh, he was a great entertainer. He was a giant. Some of the musicians that come along, like Jordan and Louis Armstrong, of course, and Duke, they're unique. Fats Waller, you can't replace those people. Everything else is a copy.
He was remarkable, really, and he really has been underrated as one of the great innovators.
But I felt so good with him. Every time I'd get in the same room, I'd feel this nice glow, you know? And when I'd sit next to him, it was just like sitting next to a nice, warm fire, you know? Really a good feeling. He's a very sweet man.
He told funny stories, and he made me laugh.
They made somebody holler, better get out of here, this is a raid. I didn't know we were breaking the law, but somebody reached over and hit me on the jaw. They had us blocked off from the front to the back, and they were putting them in the wagon like potato sacks. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen that scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen that scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. I knew I could get away if I had a chance, but I was shaking like I had the St. Vitus dance. Now I tried to crawl under a bathtub when the policeman said, where you going now, bub? Now they got us out of there like a house of fire, put us all in that black mirage. Now they might have missed a pitiful view, but they got both me and my buddy too. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never see that scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn.
Our look at Louis Jordan was written by Jim Dulzo and produced by Tamar Charney. Post-production and editing by Paul Townsend and Jonas Brzezanskis. Special thanks to Margaret Howes and Johnny Otis. Jazz Profiles is produced by Tim Owens. Assistant producer, Madeline Smith. Executive producers for the Jazz Profile series are Mary Beth Kirshner and Maury Horwitz. To email us, or for more information about this
and other programs in our series, contact us through NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts.
Give me one of them damn fish sandwiches.
Get away from that, boy.
Yow!
I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is NPR, National Public Radio.